Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Monday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. I am no longer SpongeBob. I am Steve. We are good.
I take it that means WWE 2K23 has downloaded for you. You got the pre-order set.
So I have the pre-order. With me and pre-orders, I still don't understand the concept because like you get it, so I assume it's going to come to me. Then you have to go click it to install it before, and it just I'm old. Like I miss just going. Going on the day that it drops and you buy it and then you have it in your hands. And now it's like, I pre-ordered it. I get it 3 days early. And then I wasn't paying attention. And now I'm playing it the same day that y'all did with Madden. That was great.
I see. I mean, to be fair, you can still buy physical copies if you want. It's all digital on this side, but you can do the pre-orders. With the physical disc, I believe you just have to go to your GameStop or something if you want to.
Lived that life before. The dog, they had me in shambles with the shipment for NCAA football. It'll be here Tuesday, delayed until Friday. What you mean?
And this is why you go digital. Speaking of shambles, I am in shambles after the season finale of The Last of Us. Buddy, what on earth? I will leave it there. No spoilers, but what on earth? It hit me right in the feels. It was a lot. Anyway.
Too much clicking for you.
Ain't no way we got a clicker joke to the news portion of the podcast before we get into the meat of this. On the W front, the Dream agreeing to contract extensions with new addition Alicia Gray. She signed through 2025. Cheyenne Parker re-signing through 2024. So they have the core of Parker, Gray, and Ryan Howard through at least 2024, next two seasons. I am intrigued. Steve, your early thoughts on that?
I like the fact that they went to go grab more pieces for that. And now there's no, we're going to use this. This is going to be the piece that we build around. Like we have a belief in this. Let's see where this takes us. And, in the W, it's nice to not have to be searching, especially with how teams are moving these days. So I think the Dream have continued to get better. I think they feel good about their vision. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out next year, but they at least have that stability with, their growing belief and their improvement.
I like it. Like, it's just a very talented, multifaceted two-way core of those three players. They have other young players on the roster. Like, I'm still very excited about Ari McDonald and what she's going to do at the point of attack for Atlanta. It's just a fun group, smart to kind of lock that in early. Also, if you've been keeping up with Athletes Unlimited at all, Alicia Gray has been hooping. She seems ready for more on-ball usage. So I, for one, am excited about what the Dream are building. I think this is going to be a really good team next season, provided they stay healthy. Good kudos to them for going ahead and locking up that core. Also on the W front, going back to last week, since we recorded a day early, we missed some news. So we're going to be doing some catching up early on. So my apologies in advance. The WNBA and ESPN announcing their broadcast schedule, with the Liberty leading the W with national broadcast with 9, the Championship Aces with 7. I get it. The Liberty did just build this super team. They got Jonquel Jones in there. They got Breonna Stewart in there. So I understand the intrigue. I will say the Aces being second following a championship on top of starting their season on the road for the first, I think, two games. It's just interesting to me. It's all I have on that front.
Go ahead. Slow down. Okay. Number one, it's Liberty season. You just got to deal with that, pal. I'm sorry. Yeah. Number two, this is not the full national schedule.
This is just the ESPN
one portion. So they could make up for it for you on the other side. And number two, a lot of positives here outside of the Aces. Number one, WNBA Countdown gets to be a thing.
Yes, and that's been much needed outside of the random ones sprinkled in throughout the year.
That's key. That matters. How many times have we turned on a W game and been like, oh, they're going right to it? Or where? What's are they talking before it? Oh, they're smashing everything into 2 minutes. Cool. No, let's get that in the regular rotation. That's great. Number two, all your concerns about All-Star in Vegas. Guess what we got, Nikias?
Go ahead.
The All-Star game in primetime.
That's big. It's very big.
Baby steps. It's just baby steps. Here's the other thing. So like the Liberty and Aces are leading the way, which you would imagine with their moves, it would be that way. I do like that six teams, at least with ABC and ESPN, have four or more appearances. I think it's important to take whatever interest that those two may be bringing to the table and try and sprinkle it throughout the league. And I think it's pretty cool. We talk about Atlanta. They're kicking off the first doubleheader of the year.
That's true.
That's fun. So it kind of feels like the W is trying to replace Seattle by committee, if I'm being respectfully messy, but we'll talk about that later. I like it. There's a good mix here. I'm excited to see how the full picture looks like, but some very good steps for the W with the national broadcast schedule. Please keep it going. Just put it on TV. The people will come.
And we have year over year over year data that suggests, hey, if you broadcast this, people will check it out. And if they check it out, more likely than not, they will like it. And it just adds to the growth of the league. And we want to continue to see that. And Steve, I thank you once again for talking me off the ledge a little bit, as I tend to do when I see TV schedules, period. You know how I feel about some of the NBA decisions. And I appreciate you. I appreciate you. This is the balance that is needed.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to represent corporations. Wait.
Ah, I see. I see. Well, let's go from balance that is needed to ballots that are needed. The NBA, MVPA, close to agreeing to a games played minimum to qualify for awards, per Shams Charania of The Athletic. And I, for one, feel like less of a sicko for wanting a firm number. I will also add that I think this should be seen as like a first step. And not, hey, games played minimum saves the awards or something like that. I don't think it's that. But I am intrigued by actually putting a number on this. And I'm curious to see where they land with that number.
This is not the victory lap that I expected, Nikias Duncan. You have brought a games played minimum debate to every topic that we have ever talked about on this pod. I was expecting you to go full Usain Bolt on this segment. And you said, nah, just make sure y'all chill with that. You sure?
I got to keep you on your toes, Steve. You got to keep you on your toes. But no, in all seriousness, because I think how it's been without the minimum, I think voters have used like games played or minutes played as tiebreakers. Mm-hmm. And I think largely it's still going to be that way. But I do think having the minimum, whether it's the same 58 that's required to qualify for the scoring lead, or whatever the number ends up being, like, I do think it helps whittle down the field a little bit. And maybe there's more incentive to do something like that with how award talk in general has risen over the last few years. And so maybe that does a little there.
You know, and if nothing else, it gives a standard or it gives a guideline or it gives mm-hmm. some sort of boundaries, which is important. I think for the most part, people usually end up doing it on accident anyways, whether they mean to or not. They may use that, as you said, as a separator. But I think it's something that's happened. Now, how they do it is going to be interesting. What is the number going to be? Is all this like hubba blah for 41 games? Is that what it ends up being? And then, okay, have we really done the thing? Number two, are you prepared for the loopholes that are going to be found?
And this is where I'm curious to see where the conversation's going. Because here we go. The
monopoly. That's why I was ready for the victory lap. Because I was holding on to that.
Yeah, you were ready for that one. I believe it. No. But like, I think this is where, and I want to quickly shout out my guy, Blake Murphy, who does tremendous Raptors work, among other things, to where will a minutes minimum also be needed? Or would a minutes minimum just be better? Because to your point, if the minimum is 65 games and we get to April and all NBA or DPOY or MVP candidate X has played in 61 games and his team has whatever seed locked up, we might see some let me check in quickly foul within the first 30 seconds, check out just to get the games played thing. Now, granted, doing that, you're going to mess up your own averages if you play in a game and don't do anything. But that option will exist. I think with having a minutes played minimum instead, or in addition to the games played minimum, if they can figure out what the appropriate number is, I think that would be helpful to curb some of that. Now, you can still game the system in a way. If your team's up 35, hey, why is insert star here still in the game at the buzzer? So you kind of bank those in early. And then once you hit April, like, I'm chilling. And so, like, there's going to be a way to game it either way it goes. I do think the minutes is going to matter. And what Blake brought up on Twitter was the all defense conversation surrounding Matisse Thybul and OG Anunoby back in 2021, where Matisse played, I want to say, 15 or 20 more games than OG, but OG played more total minutes. But because the games gap was as large as it was, like, Matisse wound up getting that spot over OG, or that was one of the reasons why he ended up getting that spot over him. And it kind of begs the question, okay, if this guy had appeared in more games, but the other guy played more and may have had a bigger impact despite the games gap, like, what, which one is better? Like, why is one better than the other? And so, like, I would like, because nothing's solidified right now. The report is just that they're close to agreeing to something. So we don't have, again, we don't have the firm number yet. I'm sure we'll get an update to that soon. I think they have until March 31st to complete the CBA agreement period, unless they both agree to extend the deadline, which they've already done a couple times at this point. So we'll see. But I think it's a step in the right direction. Like, I do think having, as you said, having a standard, like, I don't think that's going to hurt. And again, because, like, the scoring leader requirement is 58 games. Like, that's not a ton. You can still theoretically miss 24 games, if I'm doing math correctly, and still qualify your average enough. So, like, I would guess, no reported, but I would guess the minimum has to be, like, you have to start at 58. Like, it wouldn't make sense. And this is where I'm going to have to reconfigure my own, like, thing. Because as we've talked about many times on the pod, I'm at 60% of games. That's 49 games over an 82 game season. And now that I look at it, it's like, well, it doesn't make sense for a player on my theoretical ballot to qualify for all NBA with 49 games. And the scoring leader has to play 9 more games than that. And so, like, I think a minimum has to be at 58 at the absolute lowest. And I would guess that it ends up being somewhere in the 60s, whether that's 62, so a player can miss 20, whether that's 65, because that sounds cool. I don't know if we get to 70, but I wouldn't be opposed to being 70. I think trying to find the balance between rewarding guys and pushing them to play more, which I think is the grander issue beyond helping voters out. The grander issue is star players are sitting out and both sides kind of agree, okay, we might need to curb this some kind of way if we can. But finding that balance between finding a high number and being low enough to where teams can still load manage without hurting their players' chances to boost the legacy, earn more money, et cetera, et cetera. That's going to be a tricky balance to find. So I'm curious to see how they nailed that.
It ain't gonna be that tricky. Load management is not going away, pal. here's what I want to tell you. If you're listening to me, there are two things that are true in life. The NBA, probably not going to shorten that season. Sorry, y'all. Teams ain't going to let it go, this load management thing, now they figured it out. Sorry. We're paying these folks. We can try and make sure they're healthy and good for when it really matters. Mm-hmm. It's a fact of life.
Can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, as someone would say.
Sure can't. Come on, man. You out here yelling at these. Never mind. I almost went full Charles Barkley. Continue. Oh, just go. Just
all go. Right. Well, we're going to roll down the line. Again, since we recorded on a Wednesday last week, we missed all of the Wednesday night / Thursday announcements. So we got the Kevin Durant announcement that he was going to be out at least 2 weeks and be reevaluated. Ja Morant was announced last Wednesday. He was going to be out the next 4 games. Also, Glendale, Colorado police, they closed their investigation into Ja and the reported gun incident. No charge or crime for Ja Morant, so he's clear there. Steven Adams to be reevaluated in 4 weeks, or I guess 3 weeks at this point. Zion Williamson going to be reevaluated in a week at this point. And Lonzo Ball shut down for the season, and per Adrian Wojnarowski, may need a third procedure on his knee to sort out whatever is happening. And that just makes me incredibly sad. I really feel for, I want everyone to get healthy and back on the floor naturally. But the Lonzo situation is just so especially sad. And it just feels like it just keeps extending out and extending out and extending out. And I just hope that he is mentally okay with everything that's going on there. Any notes between the injuries that we missed and I obviously agonized over for the last 5 or 6 days?
Yeah, you do not like missing news for the dunkers, so make sure you guys thank Nikias. He's always looking out for you. I would love for just Kevin Durant to have a clean runway of health. Like, I want to turn injuries off anyways, but I would love to see him just get going and be able to play basketball with joy, especially in this new situation. The Steven Adams part is, I think, as we go on, pretty sneaky for Memphis. They have bigs, but they do not have another one of those. And, you know, it's easy to say, hey, they're using more movement. He was a big part of that. He's a very good handoff player. He's a very good screener. He's a good offensive rebounder. And they're missing some of that juice, some of those extra opportunities. That's a pretty big bummer for them. Zion, just want him to get right. Just want him to get right. That's the most important thing to me. Sorry, Pelicans fans. Lonzo thing hurts. It's hurt. It's a real bummer for him to have to continuously deal with this and try and get back, and it's just not responding. Like, that's a part maybe we're not putting enough credit or understanding enough of. And so I just want to make sure he's good, not just physically, but mentally. That's a lot to deal with.
That is a lot to deal with indeed. Best of wishes to all the players currently trying to work back from their injuries. Steve, let's talk about the weekend. Let's talk about teams that are making us think in some way, shape, or form. Who's on your mind over this last recent stretch?
Cannot shake the Philadelphia 76ers. I cannot shake the Philadelphia 76ers, Nikias. I can't do it. We've done a whole pod on them. I've brought them up a few times. They're the 3 seed. We don't know if they can beat the top 2 seeds, but they keep coming, and it's different ways. Like, it's a 5-game win streak, big comeback against Portland, some pretty gutsy wins in between. They went 4-1 on a road trip. They've won 20 of their last 26 games. They're 3rd in the league in offensive rating. They're 9th in the league in defensive rating. They're 3rd in the league in net rating. And they're 26th in pace. I cannot shake that there's a belief building. I cannot shake that there's something that this team is understanding about themselves that they haven't had. They didn't have last year or the year before. There's a confidence that comes with that. I don't necessarily know what it means. Like, is this regular season survival? Or is this something that can transfer? Either way, they are finding a way to get things done for a team with some players and a coach that usually get memed during these type of games. Like, I'm trying to rack my brain and see how much of what they found, what they believe in, how valuable is that? How much does that transfer over? But guys, it feels like they're fitting their roles, Nikias. It feels like they're playing together. It feels like they understand who they are, when they need to be who they are. The lineup combinations make sense. Am I off? I got more, but am I off?
I don't think you're off. Just a quick thing that I would add. Since December 1st, this is a 45-game sample for the Sixers. They're 33-12. That is the best record in the NBA. This has been an extended run of Philadelphia's really, really, really good.
And we still don't know what it means. Like, I'm not even sure you're allowed to say it in March, but Joel Embiid has been an insane person. The mid-range jump shot, Nikias, what do you do with it?
You hope that he misses.
What do you do with it? Man, when I saw Portland start the second half in zone and Joel Embiid's response was, cool, I'm going to just chill in this elbow area and wait for someone to pass me the ball and then shoot a pull-up, I was like, okay, it's actually different. So in the month of March, Embiid's averaging 36.7 points, 6.8 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 1.8 blocks, 1.3 steals. He's shooting 59.8% from the field this month on 20.3 attempts and averaging 13.5 free throw attempts a game. I could talk.
There we go.
He scored 30 or more in all games he's played in March. He has 6 straight games of scoring 30 or more and shooting 50% or better. What do you do with that?
You hope he misses, Steve. You hope he misses. All you can do of that is hope that he misses. And I'm glad you referenced the Portland game, because I was watching the end of that one live and I was clipping things and I was like, huh, look at Portland executing. Look at Portland doing this. This is how they're attacking, trying to attack Embiid on the other end. Not that Embiid was playing poorly at all. It's just like, okay, this is the coverage. This is the counter that they have. Like, okay, Portland, I see you. This will be a very important win. Never mind the fact that, you know, they had a lead and then Philly rallied, whatever, whatever. Like, okay, they're pulling it together when they need to. Bet. Joel Embiid throws it all over the top rope with a turnaround. It's like, okay, well, thanks for playing, Portland. That was cool. You played hard. Joel Embiid just saw your coverage and said, I'm just going to knock down a shot anyway. And just like, what do you do with that?
Side note, since you brought it up, that if I'm a Blazer fan, that was an extremely painful loss because the amount of good things that they did outside of protecting the lead, like the amount of quality looks they generated, you had Dame just punishing Philadelphia, trying to beat the level, trying to switch anything they wanted to do. You had Nurk not only making short roll decisions, but finishing on the short roll.
Yes.
You had extra passes swing and you lost that. Anyways, different subject for a different day. If you're a longtime dunker, you get it. Can we talk about James Harden this year, though?
You mean the James Harden that is now leading the NBA in assists? Is that the one you're referring to?
Can we put some respect on his name? Because it felt like everyone had kind of made the turn on James, and he has responded in a way that I don't think people understand. And it's been too faceted, right? The playmaking has been incredible. And it's more so the way that he's done it. Whatever your defense is, cool, two dribbles, decision. That's it. We still get the switch. I'm going to try and attack you and lull you to sleep in some of those possessions. But pick and roll, I'm not playing around. I'm coming off. I'm getting downhill. Are you here? Cool. Here you go, Joel Embiid. Like, it's automatic between those two. We got to talk about the automatic nature of the James Harden, Joel pick and roll right now. Empty corner, you're in a drop, cool. That's what y'all decided. Y'all opted to say, hey, we're going to play the drop. That's cool. I am taking two dribbles and throwing it in the pocket every time. He's either going to shoot that mid-range or he's going to keep going and draw a foul, or I'm going to keep it and shoot. And if you decide to, hey, we're just going to bring over help from the strong side right at the nail, I'm going to kick it to a shooter. It's automatic. Every single time he's making the right play. And they've made that adjustment. And over the stretch, you see more and more. I'm looking at the people that James Harden is looking to attack. Grant Williams, come here. Jay Crowder, come here. Oh, Jeremy Grant, that's fine. It's not just small people. It's not just bigs. I feel pretty good right now. And so I'm gonna try and put my head down, get a little HB dive going. And that kind of blend has been really, really good for them. One wrinkle I've liked offensively, and I might be off, but it feels like we're getting more elbow touches for Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I like that, one, it's a good way to keep pressure on teams. Two, it's a good way for Embiid to have a little bit of room to operate and see the defense. Three, you can just flow out of it. So you can get to some of the different things you like to do. So if you want to get to that Harden Embiid two-man game with the empty side, you just throw it to Embiid at the elbow first and then flow into it without giving everything away. It's a way to get Maxi involved as well. It's a way to get Tobias involved as well. And then Embiid can still attack. So I've liked the variety that they've kind of gotten to sometimes. It's something I've noticed here lately. That's been fun. I like the defense too. I'm not going to lie. There's more effort. There's more activity. They're working to keep their base. You're seeing them fly around a lot more than they had before. And you're kind of seeing some playoff elements develop. And I go back to that Portland game. You put Joel Embiid on Matisse Thybulle. You put PJ Tucker on Nurkic. So you are able to have Tucker involved in the action. You can keep Embiid in that role to help, but you can keep some versatility with it. Embiid was still able to get to the level. He was still able to show some switching. So I like that, hey, we have a little bit more versatility, but we are still building this base. And then when they play Washington, you're seeing Embiid go with a show and recover. You've seen him go with late switches. So there are some things that they're starting to throw in there where it's like, okay, we're gearing up for what we may have to do down the stretch. And that's where I'm intrigued. And all of that being said, Nikias, I have zero idea if this team can beat Boston and Milwaukee.
I was waiting on the elbow drop.
That is all that matters, though. It's such a shame. You can have the best season ever, and it only matters, can you beat Team A or Team B? If Philly was the one seed, I think it'd be a different story. If they only have to beat one of them, I think it's a different story. If their path is going to include both of them, boy, that's a lot. And I don't think it says anything about them. It's just, that's the matchup. Winning is hard, dog. Winning is hard.
Winning is very difficult. Just to bounce off a couple of your earlier points, which first and foremost, tremendous stuff on Philadelphia. I'm glad that you are enjoying watching them. They have been a really good basketball team for a long time now. And this recent stretch also has, I'm glad you mentioned like Embiid at the level. The Embiid defense has been the most fun part for me. And I take it back to the opening week pod we did when Embiid had those first two games. I'm just like, wait. We had Doris Burke on this here podcast, and I said, hey, keep an eye on Joel Embiid for Defensive Player of the Year. And it started with that. And I'm just like, hey. And then we found out he's, you know, his offseason was kind of messed up. He was feeling from injury. It's like, okay, well, let me calm down, whatever, whatever. But watching guards look visibly terrified when they turn the corner and pick and roll when Embiid's in a drop, and immediately deciding, nope, let me go to the other side. Let's run a second action. Let's see what we can do. That's so valuable, especially considering with, you know, Philly going back to their traditional starting lineup, they have Maxey and Harden out there now. The point of attack can be messed with, but it almost doesn't matter because even if we run James Harden into a screen, if we run Tyrese Maxey into a screen, which keep an eye on his screen navigation, it's looking a little bit better as of late, but we run either of those two guys into a screen, we better be really comfortable pulling up at the elbows. And even then, Embiid may venture out and contest the shot. And then that, you know, that 46% shot at the elbow might be a 38% shot now because you have to do it over Embiid. And you don't even give the second thought of driving deeper because of what Embiid can be at the rim. That's fun. Watching him at the level, you mentioned the Portland game. I go to the Indiana Pacers game where 147, 143 in regulation, that was a fun one. But at any rate, end of that game, Joel Embiid, not just at the level, coming up higher, flat out hedging against Tyrese Halliburton and getting back to his man and scrambling back without it opening up anything. It's just like, okay, Joel can do this. This is part of the frustration that people have with Joel because of the pockets of games that he doesn't do that. But like, this is a terrifying 7-2 man that can wall off the paint just by standing there. Or can get up and make sure your guard can't turn the corner. Also, you can't slip this pass overhead for a short roll read because Joel Embiid is large and has good instincts with his hands into as well. And it's just like, yo, when Joel Embiid's at his best, he is a Defensive Player of the Year caliber guy. This is why I had him as a dark horse before the year. Not going to win it this year. I'm not sure what happens with all Embiid. I don't think he makes an all-defensive team. But, like, this is the level of impact that he can have defensively.
And I'm glad you brought that up because it's been interesting. I know I mentioned the Marcus Gasol comparison earlier this year. But it's getting to a point where you can see Embiid mastering the other parts of defense and Philadelphia embracing how important his help is. But because of that, combined with what we've seen when Embiid is not engaged, they look the same at times, I feel like, to people. Mm-hmm. So you're taking whatever thoughts you have of Embiid in a drop, not engaged, getting beat with this, and I feel like they're a little different.
Yeah, that's
because this is more by design to allow Philadelphia to be a little bit more active. Like, turn on a Sixers game, watch James Harden's activity defensively. It's different. Maxey, active. Melton, active. Like, there's an activity around the ball. That's mainly because they know big man's, he's back there. Big fella back there. Yeah. He's back there. We can fly around a little bit. As opposed to, and this isn't like invalidating this criticism, where it was they had the size, they had more length, and it was just Embiid in a drop, giving up a pull-up, not engaged. So it's like, how do we kind of marry the vision of those two and realize what he brings to the table for the Sixers defensively and what they're trying to get out of him? And now you see, as I mentioned, those playoff elements, that's what they want going forward. They want to be able to have Embiid as the base and not as involved in actions. Like, it wouldn't surprise me to see, well, it's going to be interesting when it comes to the matchups, but to see them tinker around with having PJ Tucker able to be in more of the switchable matchups mm-hmm. than purely, hey, you're guarding this guy. Like, that's another dynamic I'm keeping an eye on. Do they want PJ to just elevate the defense, or do they want him to be that defensive guy? And I feel like there's been a little bit of a shift there as the season's gone on.
No, I like that. And you also kind of referenced it in regards to like PJ Tucker taking on the center and Joel Embiid chilling on Matisse Thybulle in the Portland game, for example. I go back to the big showcase game between Denver and Philadelphia, where end of the second quarter, now it's PJ Tucker on Nikola Jokic. And in the second half onward, that was just the matchup. And now it's Joel, quote unquote, guarding Aaron Gordon. And we ended up getting a mailbag question about that. Like, hey, how is Denver going to counter that if more teams try that? And we have Denver thoughts. So we will dig deeper into that portion and also just the team at large a little bit later. But it's nice to see, and it's a credit to Doc Rivers. It's nice to see that kind of experimentation during the regular season and having it pop the way that it has. Go ahead.
Are you okay?
Yeah, yes, I'm fine.
You said a credit to Doc Rivers. Am I here? Hello?
It is a credit to Doc Rivers. Hey, he's got to make the adjustments in the postseason, so we'll see. But no, in all seriousness, like, he deserves a hat tip for doing that. And we talked about the stars, mentioned some of the other role guys. Like, I think Jalen McDaniels has offered a level of versatility defensively that helps unlock Philadelphia experimenting. That move is looking good. I was a little bit lower on it at the go ahead.
I want an apology because trade deadline happened and I was reacting to every move and I was like, hey, I'm kind of intrigued by him defensively. And I got packed up because it was like, got packed up and Ron McDaniels, dog, to the point where I had to be like, hey, you know what? I got to rethink this one. I want an apology. I'm not going to circle back, but if you heard this and you did that, acknowledge me.
I respect the acknowledgement. And like when we had the trade deadline pond, I was like, okay, I like what he can do defensively. Will he be utilized in a way that maximizes him? And also, will the offense be good enough to where it matters? And like, I'm still keeping an eye on what the offense is going to be with him, but like the defensive utilization has just been there. And, you know, we briefed on it on earlier episodes, like he's closed some games for them. And so if he's already getting that trust, like I feel a little bit better about the acquisition. So I wanted to give him the shot as well. But no, Philly's been hooping. I would say among, you know, the team A, team B being Milwaukee and Boston, like I like their chances better against Milwaukee than I do against Boston. That just, there's just a level of defensive versatility. Not that the Bucks don't have it, but just the way that they defend Embiid and the way that they send help and different ways that they do so in the cadence of it. And the wings that they have to hunt some of their guards. Like there's just enough surrounding that matchup to where I just don't like that one for Philly. Not that they can't do it, but I would just pick Boston in that series, barring some kind of injury thing. Milwaukee feels a little bit different.
No, I feel you. And it's weird. Now that you bring it up. For me, when it comes to Boston, I feel like Boston can bother Philadelphia's offense more. So they have more people and more things they can do to keep Embiid out of rhythm, which is literally the biggest thing in the world. And They have enough size and length to throw at James Harden and feel comfortable. And now it's like, okay, can you figure it out? With Milwaukee, I think Joel Embiid likes the drop. I think he likes shooting over Brook Lopez. I feel like James Harden feels comfortable. Can they guard them? Is where I go. Can they defend them consistently? And it's like, okay. So it's kind of like a battle of both worlds. They got to climb one fence over here. They got to climb another one over here. Which one hurts them the most? And I don't know.
Yeah. And this is why, like, that would be a really fun series. I think that'd be a really fun series. Not that Boston Philly couldn't be fun, because those are two really good teams at the end of the day. I would pick Boston against Philly in a series right now, barring something shifting. And like, I would pick Milwaukee in a series over Philly, barring something shifting. But like, that one feels more okay. I'm like 54-46. Milwaukee wins that one, as opposed to I am pretty confident about Boston winning the series without injury, if that makes sense. But no, Philadelphia's been hooping. To your earlier James Harden, Joel Embiid point, just peeping in on Second Spectrum, they are the only pick and roll duo in the NBA with 1,000 picks between them. They are the highest volume pick and roll pairing in the NBA. On any possession featuring a Harden and Embiid pick and roll, 1.1 points per possession, which is fourth highest among high volume pairings. They have been elite, to say the least. You've already detailed how and the different questions that they throw at defenses that they can't really solve. It's been fun watching them build. It's mostly been fun watching them build the boat out of that. There was some movement questions earlier in the year, but ultimately those two are just so dominant. And with James Harden looking the way that he looks right now, like it's the him countering with the mid-range game, him having the pull-up three going for him, the playmaking speaks for itself, and the burst looks better. It's like the further away he gets from the hamstring stuff that was bothering him, he still isn't like, he's not Houston James Harden in terms of burst, but he's closer to or right back at the early Brooklyn level of burst. And that's all he needs when you throw in the mid-range scoring, the pull-up scoring, and then just the passing reads that opened up with the gravity that has a score. And then when you combine all of that with what Joel Embiid does the defense is just by being on the court, it's scary, man. It's scary. I mentioned best record in the NBA since December 1st, second best offense during that stretch. So Philly's been hooping for sure. Did you have anyone else you want to shout out?
Hey, look, who's won three straight? It's the Los Angeles Clippers. And the Clippers have had me in hell analysis-wise all season. This whole Russ thing made everything go left. They lost, what, five straight once he came on? And now they've won three in a row. And I want to point out, I was watching the Knicks game, and guess who's on the floor to end the game?
Eric Gordon.
I was told that's not a thing that can happen. I only bring them up to say the Clippers have their flaws. They go up and down. Those haven't necessarily changed because Russell Westbrook exists. We should give Russell Westbrook a little bit of credit. Isn't there a number about on and off stats with Russell Westbrook that's floating out there somewhere?
I just pulled it up on PvP Stats, greatest site in the world. A plus 1.1 net rating with Russ on the floor, a minus 7.9 net rating with Russ off the floor. Now, a lot of that is opponent three-point shooting, 34.8% with Russ on the floor, 37.9% with Russ off the floor. So we'll see what happens when that normalizes. But at least statistically, the Clippers have just been better with Russ on the floor.
Interesting. They have their flaws. Let them work through them. But again, we are talking about the playoffs, and I can't shake the fact that this is a team that has multiple lineups they can throw at you. They have Kawhi Leonard. They have Paul George. They have defense. This is going to be a playoff setting. They can put their paws on you. Just stay tuned. And speaking of stay tuned, I'm going to get to my last one, Nikias. This may be the most takey segment that I've ever brought to the table.
Wait. Before you continue, I would just like to throw in very briefly that Kawhi Leonard is playing like a top five player in the NBA and has been over the last 25, 30 games. I just want to throw that out there.
Is there an article? Has someone written an article about that?
There may be an article on basketballnews.com detailing what Kawhi Leonard has done as a pick and roll ball handler, a screener, a post-up hub, an isolation guy, and a guy that's been a menace on the defensive end as well. You can check basketballnews.com and see if you can find that article. You know, if not, no qualms. But Kawhi is, that's a scary dude, man. And it just does not matter what you throw at him sometimes.
And that's the scary part when it comes to the Clippers in the playoffs. I don't think that the Kawhi cares. And I feel like this is a Clipper team that, oh, wow, you're doubling. We can actually move the ball. Like I can't shake that plus lineups plus defense. I'm sorry. I don't know where they land. It's going to be tough in the West, but I think we just need to pump the brakes on the whole Russ deal. Just please.
I would also very quickly add that Russell Westbrook has been setting screens for Kawhi Leonard. We'll see if it continues. But
what do you mean? What do you mean? Who said that before? I believe I said that. I brought that up as something that he could do. I was told that doesn't happen. I got yelled at.
See, here's the thing.
Right? As if the Clippers haven't had everyone and their mom scream for Kawhi Leonard, and you want to tell me Russ won't?
I will say to shoot some bail. I was also someone that was skeptical. Like, hey, this can work if he does it. And in multiple stops, it has been like a game or two of Russ doing it and then never seeing it again in any sort of volume. And so it is encouraging that in the early goings, and the sample is still relatively small overall, it is encouraging that he is doing so consistently right now.
Folks, I never want to take away your opinions. I am just a human being. I am not the expert, but context is important. Just remember that when it comes to these players, these moves, context is important. The Josh Hart that you saw in Portland is not the Josh Hart that you see in New York. These things change.
That's pretty true.
Speaking of changing.
Okay.
Golden State Warriors.
Okay.
I wrote them down. I watched the Golden State Milwaukee game, and it brought something back up in my brain. And the number one reason it brought something back up to my brain, did you see the sneer that Steph Curry delivered during that game?
Yeah.
So I got to thinking. So if number 30 is making those kind of faces and doing that kind of stuff, 28-7 at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only teams with more home wins, well, I should say the only team, it's Denver with 30. Milwaukee, Cleveland, and Memphis all have 28 with Golden State. There's your top five. 7-26 on the road. I asked the question on this very pod, are they going to be able to beat Detroit, San Antonio, and Houston? All of them. They're only beating San Antonio and Houston right now. They're tied with Detroit. Seven straight. Wait,
they don't have more road wins than James Wiseman's Detroit Pistons? Is that what I'm hearing?
Good shot by you, DeKais. Leave that alone. Right. Seven straight home wins for them. They haven't lost a home game since February 11th. 8 straight road losses. They have not won a road game since January 30th. These are teams that beat them at home, DeKais.
Okay.
Denver, Indiana, Detroit, Orlando, Phoenix, Brooklyn, Lakers. It's not awesome.
Ah.
But Klay Thompson's been on a run. 241 made threes, second most in the league. Since January 1st, averaging 25.1 points per game, shooting 43% from three. Stephen Curry is Stephen Curry. If you don't believe that, go look at that Saturday game against Milwaukee where it was just, hey, good defense. Please continue to deal with me. A nice drop you have there. Way to be in front. I'm going to pass to Draymond and immediately be at the three-point line. See you there. See you later, pal.
Going to drop in these buckets.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, double pick and roll. I'm going to throw ahead and cut right off. Yeah, good job. You guys are doing great. Dante DiVincenzo is heating up. Becoming a productive member for the Warriors in the ways that they need him to.
I love how much the Dante slander you got has bothered you.
It was so just loud. Like, what are you talking about? Every time I've ever brought up Dante DiVincenzo, I'd be like, hey, man, I've been yelled at. And so, yeah, I'm going to bring it up. Jamichael Green starting to raise his hand in class a little bit more. Seeming to get a few more answers right. Mm-hmm. Shuffle in the deck a little more. They still got a Draymond Green. They still got Jordan Poole. Kevon Looney, very important. I say that because one of the concerns is probably rotation, right? Playoffs, you only got to play 8 people. Just saying. And number one, I hope everything is okay with Andrew Wiggins. Don't know what's happening. I hope he's good. It's wild that in this day and age, the less you know, the more worried you get. But I hope that he's good, number one, first and foremost. But the Warriors only got to play 8 people. We don't have to have these same depth issues, right? Have you had any issues with the Warriors offense this year?
There have been some pockets, but mostly nah.
Nah, just pretty bad on the road. My mind goes to the playoffs. You have to deal with Steph Curry. You have to deal with their movement, which, by the way, really difficult to deal with in a playoff setting when you're trying to scheme and game plan things. And this is a team that says, hey, we're just going to keep doing stuff.
Hey, good job taking away that split action. It'd be a shame if we just pitch it to the outside and flow it to a ball screen with Steph and Curry.
Yeah, or you know what? We should just do more pick and roll. Oh.
I'm glad you said that. Quick shout out to my goal, Joe Varey, with the Spain pick and roll thread, in which I think Golden State ran 11 in the same game and just carved. I wish I could remember the opponent. So much joy brought to me from that thread. Joe's been doing great stuff with Golden State all year long. Anyway, continue.
Shout out to Joe. And they were trying to hit Milwaukee with some of that against the drop until Steph Curry decided, I don't actually care to run this action. I'm going to hit a step back 3 and tie the game. So do you think the defense could perk up come playoff time?
I think it can, especially since, you know, again, we want Andrew Wiggins to be okay. If he comes back, that certainly makes the wing room feel better. Because right now it's like Clay's been fine and Jonathan Kuminga has been, you know, as we talked about in the last week, like he's really been a good multi-positional defender. Andrew Wiggins really helped solidify that wing room defensively. Also just unlock a level of lineup versatility that they don't really have right now. And so, yeah. And then isn't Gary supposed to be back at some point late March and April, somewhere in there?
Yeah, you got an Iggy back. You got a Gary back. Hopefully you get a Wiggins back. You got Dante playing well. You got Jermichael. Do you see where I'm going here?
Yeah, they can coalesce at the right time.
This is a very Warriors-related stat, but did you know they're 25-4 when they hold teams under 115 points? That's got to be the most 2023 Warriors stat of all time. I mean, league average is 114.5, so it sounds bad, but it sounds good, but it sounds bad. And here's my last point. All Golden State has to do is win 4 road games to win a title.
That's a wild thing when you say it out loud. Guys, we just got to fix this four times.
I'm just saying, just think about it. I flirted with the idea on the Bird app, but literally, if they were to make a run, they only got to win four. There is a world where that is true. Are you prepared for that?
I wouldn't have much of a choice at that point. That's just, they can do it.
Because here's my thing. Western Conference teams, how many teams have a road record above 500 this season?
Maybe like two.
One. Sacramento. One. Denver 16-16. Clippers are 18-18, I believe, coming into this pod. It ain't great for everyone. It just ain't that bad. Just preparing everyone. They got a path of Memphis and Sacramento. No disrespect. Bing, bang. They're in the conference. Hey, man.
Yep.
Steph spooked me. That's all I wanted to throw out.
That's all it is. That's all it is. Shout out to the Warriors. Was that all you had?
Yeah, that's all I had.
Okay. All right. Well, then I will start brief, and I will shout out the Indiana Pacers, who are quietly, as of the recording, they are, I think, a half game behind the Bulls for the 10th seed. They are 5-3 since the All-Star break. They've won two straight, and it would be three straight if they didn't lose that 147-143 game to freaking Philly, which, again, I highly recommend anyone with league pass, particularly if you're not a fan of either of those two teams. I would imagine Pacer fans don't want to go back to that one, but just watch that game and just watch how insane the offense was. But anyway, 5-3 since the All-Star break. We recorded early on a Monday, so I think they're going to be without Tyrese Halliburton, Miles Turner, and Benedict Mathurin in this upcoming game against Detroit, and we'll see how long they are out. So I'm going to get my praise out of the way right now. But this is such a fun, fast-paced, spaced-out group that, you know, the field curtain back, they're kind of a palate cleanser for me as well. As I've said on this podcast many a times, like, I watch everyone, but I watch a whole lot of Miami. Watching Miami's offense compared to Indiana's offense, it's just a whole different thing. So I appreciate Indiana for that.
So it's bone-in wings against boneless wings, what you're telling me?
Ah, I see. But anyway, we'll start with some Halliburton praise. He's only played in three of Indiana's last five games, all those coming in March. 32 points per game, 46% on threes, 95% from the line on seven attempts. If Tyrese Halliburton's getting to the line seven times a game, your defense is in trouble. The passing continues to stick out. Skip passes, dump offs, lobs, pocket passes against high coverages. Watch that Bulls game to see some of those pocket passes he was throwing into Miles Turner or whoever would screen for him. It was a masterclass. 15.3 assists to two turnovers over those three games. And you zoom out since the All-Star break, 80 assists, 9 turnovers. It is insane for him to have the ball in his hands as much as he does, to score as much as he does, as efficiently as he has, while also passing the ball as much as he does without passing it to the other team. It is a wild offensive run for Tyrese Halliburton right now.
And now, as you continue, I want to mention, this is a huge growth for him in this system to be able to make these reads against multiple defenses consistently and to continue to move the ball. Like, he's breaking people down one-on-one. He's playing in pick and roll. He's playing off handoffs. It's just a lot of good things that he's putting together. And I feel like it deserves more praise.
It does. Because, like, the shooting and what he's done and the growth that he's shown as a pull-up guy, like, I think that's been discussed. Maybe not as much as it should because of how wild the growth has been. But we've at least talked about that. He's getting to the rim more. Like, the free throw alone is like, wait a minute. This is a little bit different. You referenced him breaking defenders down. And we've talked about it earlier in the year to where, you know, teams will try to switch against him because they don't think he can get to the rim. It's a quick pass. He cuts immediately after the pass. He catches the ball on the move. Now he's downhill, and now he can get to his floater. He can finish at the rim. Career high in field goal percentage at the rim this year. Career high rim rate for him this year as well. Or if the defense is tilted in that way, now it unlocks the passing again. And now the ball is pinging around. Now it's finding Buddy Hield again, who continues to shoot the leather off of the basketball. This is one of the greatest shooters of all time, and I don't think anyone really talks about it because it's Buddy Hield. And, like, we haven't seen Buddy Hield in, like, a conference finals or something like that. This is one of the best three-point shooters ever. And he's just casually playing with one of the best passers in the league. Again. So that's been a fun partnership. But actually, while I'm on Buddy Hield portion, using Buddy Hield as a screener. We've talked about the Pacers using all their small guards as screeners and early offense and stuff like that. But watching Tyrese, Buddy, and Miles Turner operate together has been a joy. One particular setup that they have like 87 different counters to. Every team in the NBA runs some variation of it. One guy brings the ball up the floor. Center comes to the middle of the floor. They're setting an off-ball screen, wide action, if you want to call it that. And then it's a quick pass to the shooter for a shot, a quick pass to that shooter. He can curl down and attack, whatever. Indiana will do that, hit Buddy early for a shot. They'll hit Buddy. He'll pitch it back to Tyrese Halliburton. Now it flows into a pick and roll. He'll hit Buddy, pitch to Tyrese Halliburton. Now it's double drag with Buddy Hield as the first screener. He's popping out. Miles Turner rolling to the rim. Hey, Miles Turner at center. He gets to roll more, period, and has more space to do so. So that unlocks that. And if all else fails, Tyrese Halliburton can just score and just knock down a pull-up over your face from like 35 feet, like he did to cap off the Bulls game. Like, it's their offense is so much fun. And with those three on the floor, like, defenses just have not found good answers. On the flip side, I would like to see Miles Turner on the floor more, averaging over 4 fouls a game since the All-Star break. And I think his absence towards the end of the Sixers game that hurt. And in general, because they trend so small, like, Miles Turner becomes even more important. Like, he has to clean up messes at the rim because the point of attack defense overall from the group is not very good. Halliburton's a part of that. And when he's off the floor, the team just cannot rebound. Even when he's on the floor, they struggle to rebound. I think since the All-Star break, I want to say they are dead last in defensive rebound rate, and they're 29th overall in rebound rate. It's not great. It's hard for them to get stops, and it's hard for them to end possessions. That's a bad combo. So they need the offense to pop the way that it has. But the offense has been good enough since the All-Star break. And because of that, they are in position to make the play-in if they continue their push there.
They've been fun, and I do want to give a hat tip to Rick Carlisle, who I did not think would do this with this group. My favorite lineups for Indiana are the four-guard lineups. Give me Miles Turner and all your good folks. Give me Miles with Tyrese Halliburton, with Buddy Hield. Give me Nora. Give me Andrew Nembhard. Let's have some fun. Throw in Benedict out there if you want to. Let's just lean into it. That was my concern. There's no questions of who's going to play. No, all y'all go out there and do stuff. And that's been my fun part of watching the Pacers. I have no stat that supports my love for this lineup. I just like the way they play. When that ball is moving, when they are in the driving kick, when they are putting pressure on teams defensively, and everyone's kind of touching it, everyone's moving it, you can see everyone's getting better. And I think that's important for Indiana to build a base somehow. Now, how good can you make that? Not sure yet. But you at least know, hey, we got something here. And that's been the fun part of the Pacers. Did you get all your Pacers points out?
Not yet. I will just briefly add, I was looking it up as you were saying this, only 41 minutes with Miles Turner, Buddy Hield, Tyrese Halliburton, and Jordan Nora on the floor together. In those 41 minutes, a 128.9 offensive rating, which would easily be the best in the NBA. And to your point about the numbers, maybe not supporting how good per se the lineup is, a 147.6 defensive rating. So
that'll do it.
So with opponents shooting over 65% on twos and 50% on threes, which I don't think either of those numbers are sustainable, but
that's why it's basketball she wrote, not basketball I wrote.
Shout out to the great Caitlin Cooper. The only other thing that I would add, and you already briefly mentioned him, Jordan Nwora looks really comfortable in Indiana, and I'm glad that he's getting the burn that he is. And that was something that I kind of questioned with the trade. I was like, hey, he should have more room in Indiana, but there are a lot of perimeter players that are already playing. So, like, how much room will he get? But no, the shooting's been solid. A little bit of downhill juice for him as well. Like, I'm still thinking about the ISO and the spin move that he hit Jabari Smith with in the Rockets game not too long ago. I'm just like, oh, this is some sauce. I like this. The Pacers, again, just moving forward, like, they got to figure out what the defense is going to be and how to get to a level. But this has been a fun group, and keep an eye on them with the play-in. Those are the last Pacers thoughts I have. Did you have anything else before we get to my other team?
Nope. Get to your other team. Let's dig for some gold, buddy.
Oh, buddy. Let's talk about the Denver Nuggets for a little bit. They are in the midst of a three-game skid, a 21-point loss to the Bulls at home. an 8-point loss to the Spurs on the road, which, good Lord, the defense played by the Nuggets in that game. We'll talk about it, though. And a tightly contested loss to the Brooklyn Nets on Sunday, yesterday, since we're going on Monday, whatever. And that apparently sparked a conversation about Coach Michael Malone's job security, which, sure, I guess.
Wait, is that real?
It's a little bit of, hey, what were these rotations? Why'd you bench Michael Porter Jr., et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Twitter's a fun place.
Okay,
but
hold on. I'm gonna let you cook for a second. But don't tell me we're about to stash all the Denver talking points that we just have not done all season into a 1 week span. Is that what we're doing? Is that what we're gonna do? Really? Really? Continue.
Ah, I see. But during this skid, the big problem has been the defense. Over these three games, a 123.6 defensive rating, which is it's bad. It ranked last in the NBA if extrapolated across an entire season. It's not great. It's not that much worse than like their season-wide defensive rating and losses, which is a shade under 122. But at any rate, even that mark would be 28th. So it's been a little bit worse than usual. And with any defense conversation, we kind of have to start with Jokic. We don't have to start with Jokic, but I think it's appropriate to start with him. Like, one, by virtue of the scheme that he's most comfortable in, that forces your defense into rotation. And it's very important for those rotations on the back end to be locked in. They have not been. And this is independent of what Jokic is doing up top, which that's been uneven. In the Brooklyn game, very good at the level. We get to that Spurs game and the reps that he was at the level. Yeah. The Bulls game, yeah. And that's just with him at the level. With him on a drop, Jokic hasn't been good in the drop all year long. Nugget fans will tell you, or people that watch the Nuggets will tell you, he can get hit in the drop in a way he didn't get hit at the level. Go ahead.
I'm going to pause you real quick. Okay. Jokic really hasn't been good in the drop ever, which is why they made the change to the scheme they made, because that's not his thing. They will bring the drop out, and I feel like they've mixed it in more lately because they're trying to not be in rotation, maybe trying to experiment, give a certain shot. It doesn't necessarily work for them as well, except for when they play Memphis. For whatever reason, that's the team where it works. But it's usually because we don't want to be in rotation. We'll take this shot. We'll take our chances. We're good. He's never really been a good drop defender. Continue. Because I'm slightly annoyed because we've talked about this. This is Denver's thing. And they're just, what's new? When they don't guard, they're not good.
Mm-hmm. That's the overarching theme, I think. Like, we've seen what it looked when we had the earlier pod where it wasn't a Nuggets guest episode, but it was more so, hey, what's go with Denver's defense? They're like 25th or whatever it was across the board in half court and transition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We said, hey, this is just a scheme with little margin for error. And the alternative is more conservative, but more conservative is just flat out bad for your best player / your backline guy in Jokic. So like, you have to nail this in order for this to work. And I think the general feeling on Denver, if you have unease about them, is like, okay, this isn't a team with a lot of scheme versatility defensively. That's not the same as saying they do not do different things, because they do. Coach Michael Malone has thrown out zone. Jokic has been in the drop, whether that's been a team-wide, this is what we're doing today, or Jokic is saying, I'm dropping on this, I'm not coming up this time. Which, however you want to parse that out, we've seen zone, we've seen drop. Obviously, we've seen Jokic at the level. It's not a matter of, are they rigid? Will they just sit in the same thing? And if it stinks, then oh well. No, they will do different things. There's just one coverage that they're good at. And if that slips at all, the rest of the defense just kind of tanks, because the ceiling just isn't as high in those other coverages. The point of attack defense for Denver has just not been very good this year. And so that, in addition to what Jokic's limitations are in a drop, and before even getting into any effort questions you may have on specific drop reps, you're already behind the eight ball. And so with us seeing more drop, check this out on Second Spectrum, see the last three games. Jokic has defended 132 pick and rolls. 60 of them are coming to drop. And opponents have generated 1.13 points per possession on those trips when attacking Jokic directly. So that's a shot or passing it to someone who immediately shoots. That is a video game number. And Denver is not, they aren't winning many playoff games, much less series, if that's going to be the level that they're defending at. But quietly, at least statistically, the Nuggets have been hit playing at the level too during this three-game losing streak. And again, it kind of ties into how locked in is the back end? How locked in are these rotations? And something that you hit on when we did the watch party for one of the Nuggets games. Plenty of possessions with Jamal Murray as the low man. A lot of possessions with Bruce Brown now has to make this low rotation. That's not a lot of size. And so there are possessions where Denver may do the right thing. And if the pass gets through, it's just a center versus a 6'3 guard or a 6'4 guard in Bruce Brown or a 6'5 guard in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And there just isn't much you can do with that except hope that they're able to draw a charge because they're not blocking the shot. And so I kind of, my mind immediately goes to like, okay, is there something in the back pocket for Coach Michael Malone within that scheme? Like if it's a situation where a team's running a ball screen and like the weak side is Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon, is there time for them to like swap assignments so Aaron Gordon makes sure he's the low man instead of Jamal Murray? Like, can you scheme that up? There'll be counters, like they'll see like some hammers or flares or something to kind of play with that or just random cuts or whatever. But like, are they even willing to experiment with something like that to kind of balance out the size issue on the back end? Or is this just going to be an Achilles heel of that because of their personnel?
I think it's just going to be an Achilles heel of that because of their personnel. And nothing I say here is, this is, please don't listen to this and say this is Jokic Bale. He just is a do your job defender. I've been saying that for years. He does his job. He does his portion. Denver has built the boat around that. If you want to argue that or not, that's fine. What I would say is this is a Denver team that when the scheme's getting hurt, it looks away. But when they can't keep the ball in front, they don't have a chance. And yeah. I feel like during this stretch, it's been a lot of drive and kick or drive and finish or get to my spot and go. And that's where your mind has to go concern-wise because, yeah, scheme versatility. But if they're getting hit like this just on random plays, plays outside of the play, Spencer Dinwiddie's coming in and giving you a career-high assist, okay, we need to reevaluate the defense. And for me, it goes larger. Just they don't have that wiggle room. And this is where I get in trouble analysis-wise. How do we properly respect what Denver has accomplished this season while also acknowledging they have to do it that way?
Yeah.
Like we talked about their defense and, okay, they're just not rotating. They can do that better. I said that. I'm pretty sure.
You did.
They
can
rotate better. They can keep the ball in front. They can get this little shot. And they do it and they get success because, yes, if they defend better, they're going to be better overall. What happens when it gets hit again? Do they have enough belief to get back to it? Is this a poor stretch? Is this a sign of things to come? And that's where it was like, I saw the clip that was circulating from the San Antonio game from folks that I'm sure have neither watched Denver or San Antonio this season. And I'm like, someone was like, hey, are you concerned about this in the playoffs? I'm like, these plays, not so much. Because I don't think that'll be the effort that we see in the playoffs. Schematically, is it broken? I don't think it is. But they have to lock in and buy in. I think that's something we have to acknowledge. Can they get to late switches with Jokic? If they get to late switches, can they build the help around it? Can they kick him out of it? If they can, that's great. But what is all that keyed in on? Rotations. So yep. It's the same thing. No matter what they try, they are going to have to rotate defensively. And if they are not locked in defensively on their rotations, it don't matter, folks. And my bigger concern when it comes to Jokic to play Austin, sorry, I know you got more, but the brain is working. It's going to be the multiple effort plays. That's all I'm concerned with. When he has to get to the level, goes back to help, and then has to get back up, those are the ones I'm concerned about. Against the Phoenix, against the Golden State, that's what I'm worried about, if you ask me.
No, I think that's fair. And, you know, just to kind of circle back, as, you know, frankly, like, Jokic had a really good day defensively against Brooklyn. I can't say that again about the Chicago game, that first loss, and I definitely can't say it against the Spurs game. Like, there isn't Bale to shoot Jokic in that Spurs game. I think the entire team was bad defensively. So if you want to classify that as Bale, you can. But like, there is no parsing through like it. Oh, this wasn't Jokic. No, he was bad in that game. And it's okay to say that. It is okay. And just to kind of zoom out about the conversation, it is okay to say Denver's defense has been terrible or within this 3-game stretch, Jokic has been bad defensively without it turning into Jokic has always been bad. He stinks as a defender, yada, 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 yada. We just had like a month and a half, 2-month run. Or 3-month run of Denver basically deciding, okay, we're going to focus in on the details. We're going to have better effort. And their defense went from like 25th to like 12th. And it's just like, okay. And honestly, they only need to be like 20th for what the offense was doing. They went from like 25th to 12th overall. And it's like, okay, well, if they're defending at this level, this is why they have a 6-7-8 game lead in the West at the time they were really rolling. We can just talk about what the segment of games is without it turning into a big referendum. And I think we would just be better to be fair and balanced about that. But at any rate, the containment has just been so bad. And I'm glad that you hit on that. Like, it's, I just expected so much more from the offseason acquisitions defensively. And of the acquisition, you factored them in. And like, I feel like I've been more positive about what I've seen from Michael Porter Jr. defensively than Bruce or KCP. And not that either of them have been awful, but like, there was a level I was expecting from those two that they just have not consistently hit. Bruce Brown off the ball has just quietly been a little bit of a mess all year. And with a team that is based on rotations the way it is, it can't. And I think because Bruce can be good one-on-one, and because that really popped in Brooklyn with them switching as much as they do, I just had a higher picture of what like the translation defensively would be like for Bruce in a system that is going to be more screen navigation driven and just off the ball. You may have to make some of those low-man rotations in a way that you didn't in Brooklyn. And so like that's been a kind of a little bit of a shock to the system for me, just watching Denver throughout the year. But like that has to be better. And again, I think KCP's been fine, but I was expecting like good for KCP. And so fine is a little bit below the level. They're going to need that. And then you circle in. They really need that because Aaron Gordon just kind of has to take your best winger forward matchup. Like he kind of has to do that. Or if they want to experiment with, let's put Jokic on the non-shooter, now it's Aaron Gordon taking on these bigger matchups. And what does that do? That means he can't be on the wing. So that means you need KCP to be able to hold up, or you need MPJ to be. And so it's just been kind of tough watching the defense during this slide. Cause I think it just, it highlights the flaws in the system to a larger level than what it may be in the macro sense, but like those issues do exist. And so I'm curious to see how quickly or if they're able to turn things around. Like we just saw a long stretch of good defense for them, or good by their standards defense. So they can get back to it, but it's just, it's bad right now. And they have to turn it around because this is not a winning formula for them.
No, you've said that. You said that when we had the last conversation. So that's why it's like these are the things that have existed. It's not new. And I think like that's sometimes what happens during the course of a season where all of a sudden a team goes on a run while they're really good. Hey, I don't think that team's that good. Hey, look, here's why they're bad. Well, friend, that was happening before as well. They just stopped doing it. So for me, my concern, and it's valid, they have concerns defensively. Offensively is where I'm like, okay, they can't go backwards there. And they haven't for the most part. And then what are your lineup combinations? If their offense can stay in this place, if they can find the right rotations and lineups that they want to have out there, they can give themselves the best shot to manage the defense. If it's going to be something else, maybe the conversation changes.
I'm glad you hit on the offense, because while they've still been able to score at a really high rate, and it's hard not to when you have Nikola Jokic on your team, like there have been enough little things where I'm like, this is off. This is a little sloppy. Some of the elbow catches or just some of the mid-post catches from Jokic are coming out a little bit higher because the entry passes that are being made. It's like, okay. Some of these cuts aren't hitting the same. Okay. Jokic can bail you out. Or he can just fit a pass through a peephole anyway. But like, wait a minute. This isn't as crisp as it was in January. There's been enough of that. And then the larger thing, you mentioned the lineup combinations. Man, the second unit for Denver. We got to discuss where the second unit is right now.
Uh-oh. Who are you going after, bud? Is it Thomas Bryant? Is it Reggie Jackson? Is it Uchiwali? Is it One Mike? What you got?
Man, listen. When I saw DeAndre Jordan log minutes over a healthy Thomas Bryant, I said, oh, no. I had concerns when we did the trade deadline episode. I did not think we were going to get here. And we go back to the Nets game, Jeff Green revenge game, by the way. Bruce Brown revenge game, by the way. We get to the Nets game, and Jeff Green is the only guy that logs back up 5 minutes. I'm like, wait a minute. This is concerning to me. Because as you something that you harp on pretty often on the pod with small ball lineups, like, okay, what is the pressure point here? Do you have a roller in the front court? The answer seems to be a resounding no, because Coach Mike Malone does not trust DeAndre Jordan. He does not trust Thomas Bryant defensively for sure. Is Zeke Nagy still on the roster? I don't know. And now we've got back to Jeff Green. And if he's your only roller or your best roller in the second unit, you're just not creating advantages. And so now it turns, so with that combined with, where has Reggie Jackson been?
What did Reggie do now? What did Reggie do now?
That's not even a what did he do now. The Denver stint has not been good for Reggie Jackson. There is time for it to turn around. But as of right now, there is a reason it's gone from, hey, it'll be cool if we had Jamal Murray with the second unit, to we need Jamal Murray with the second unit if we have hopes of not being outscored by 15 in the non-Jokic minutes. And the fact that it's gotten there is a problem. They just don't have any consistent shot creation on that second unit. And they are relying on Jamal Murray to carry things when he's out there with them. And on the shots that, on the days that the shots are falling for him, they can tread water or do a little bit better. And if he doesn't have it, or if we just see all bench, it is an immediate problem for Denver.
No, I mean, my thing again with the second unit is teams aren't fearful. There's no pressure point. So what are you running? You want to run pick and roll? Switch. Now what?
Yep.
How do you get the drive and kick? How do you put pressure on teams? How do you force more rotation? Jamal Murray with the second unit is great. It's fine. He can sustain. A, you're using up more minutes for that knee, and B, it's him shooting. How much is he going to make be making plays? So that's where it's like roster construction wise, how do we emphasize it? Cool, we got Bruce Brown. We could use him as a screener, except we kind of need him as a wing, so we can't use him as a screener. Shoot, I told you when they first made the trade, I was like, why is Bruce Brown coming off the staggers with this unit? What's happening? So they threw KCP out there. And they tried Jamal Murray. And now, either way, they haven't been able to find the combinations to unlock a piece that they want with that second unit. And it's hurting them. And that's where it's like, okay, I'm sure the conversation is going to be the conversation, but their flaws are right there in front of you. They've overcome them. Their positives are right there in front of you, but their flaws are right there in front of you. Bench units, defense, playmaking, shot making. They do it, very tough to deal with. A couple of things come off the table, it's hard for them to win. They got a slim margin for error, but they're also very good. It's okay to say that, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Like once, I think in the Brooklyn game, we saw like a KCP plus bench minute unit, and I was like, okay, wait a minute. That can't be what you're trying to hold on to this lead with. You can't do that. Denver just, we're back to the other pot when we were questioning Denver. They just have to play better.
Yeah.
That's very boring analysis. I'm sorry. You listen to the podcast, we give detailed analysis. So we've given our deep thoughts already. They have to play better. We've seen the template. We've seen the formula with them.
Back to your defense point. Even in that Brooklyn game, they tried switching double. They tried drop. They tried the level. So there are things they're trying to do, but they're all based on their ability to rotate. And then when they rotate, you got to keep the ball in front. And when they don't do that, buddy, it gets tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, just a shout out to Brooklyn for winning that game, by the way. Just want to give them a hat tip while we're here.
Okay, hipster nets. Here we go.
Oh, here we are.
There right. You go.
Is this what we're on? This is how we land the Nuggets playing. That's tough. All right. Let's get into the play. Yes. Ain't no way you just dropped. Okay. I'm just going to leave that alone. All right. Anyway, some players to shout out. I will go first in this one. We will start with Zach LaVine, who is averaging 31.4 points on 66 true shooting and a little over 3 assists in 8 games since the Patrick Beverley era began. So that man listened.
So Pat Bev was right.
Pat Bev might have been right. Might have been right. Over Zach LaVine's last 5 games. 41 points, 27 points, 42 points, 29 points, 36 points. 38% of his shots coming at the rim since the All-Star break. On possessions featuring a Zach LaVine drive, the Bulls are scoring 1.29 points per possession, which is fifth among 58 players with at least 75 drives since the All-Star break. The knee looks fine. He's been aggressive. He's finishing at the rim. He's getting to the free throw line, over 6 free throw attempts during this during the Bev era as well. Zach LaVine is hooping, and Chicago Bulls quietly just in the play-in. So hat tip to them in the run they've been on. Trae Young, 27-9 since the All-Star break. 41% from three on over 6 attempts since the All-Star break. 1.8 steals per game for Trae Young since the All-Star break. I am not going to be disingenuous and argue that Trae Young is some elite defender. He is not. I am not even going to say Trae Young has been like really good since the All-Star break. He has not been. The effort has been so much better than what we've seen in the beginning of the year. It kind of popped for me when I was in Miami and I was there for the first Heat Hawks game and he got the Tyler Hero matchup from jump. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. You'd think he tried to like stash him somewhere else. That's weird. And he legitimately bothered Tyler Hero. And the screen navigation was like solid. And he was bothering the handle. And in situations where Miami was trying to get him into an unfavorable switch, he fought, he denied, and then he would run if they tried to scramble him out and get back to his guy without something else opening up. I'm just like, these are the vibes I was getting during the Eastern Conference Finals run with Atlanta. Like, he doesn't have to be great. He just can't be a dumpster fire defensively. He just has to give consistent effort and be in the right spots. And it feels like we've had more of those stretches for him defensively. And I go back to early first quarter possession against Washington in their most recent game, where I think it's Bradley Beal bringing the ball up. He pitches it to DeLon right on the wing, and it's supposed to flow right into another handoff with Beal catching the ball downhill. They switch that. You got Trae Young on Bradley Beal. Trae Young denies Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal tries to back cut him. Clint Capela picks that up. Trae hightails it to the opposite corner to pick up Kyle Kuzma as Clint Capela picks up Bradley Beal. And it's like, that's it. That is it. Fight, give effort, get to where you're supposed to go so the rest of the defense isn't in a bunch of rotation. That's all he has to do because the offense will be there. The playmaking will be there. He will get to the free throw line, and now the three ball is falling for him. Just keep an eye on Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks. That's all I ask. Brooke Lopez, averaging 20 points, shooting nearly 41% from three since the All-Star break. Also averaging 3 blocks. He's been an absolute wall on the interior, much like he has been for the majority of the season. That's why he's very much a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year still. 20 or more points in 3 of his last 5 games to steal a Steve Jones Jr. framework there. 26 points. He was a plus 11 in 3-point loss against Philly. We talked about that in a little bit. Very quietly on the year, because we talk about Brook Lopez and like the spacing and what that does for the offense. And we do briefly talk about the post-ups because we know what he did when he was in Brooklyn / New Jersey. Among 38 players with at least 100 post possessions this year, Brook Lopez is second in points per possession.
Yeah.
Do you know who's first?
No.
I think you really enjoy this one.
Who?
DeMar DeRozan. You would have had to be there for either of our 2K watch parties to understand why Steve immediately started laughing. Another shout out, OG Anunoby. One, glad you're healthy, friend. Two, the Raptors currently on a 3-game losing streak, which stinks, and we will see what's going on with their play-in chances or what they want to do there. That's a whole other thing to discuss on a different podcast. 20 points per game for OG Anunoby during the stretch, shooting nearly 69% from the field, 58% on 6 3-point attempts, 3 steals. I ended up tweeting this out because I was watching that Raptors Lakers game live. If you had questions about why the reported asking price for OG Anunoby was so high, watch that Laker game, watch his minutes, and watch the duel with him and Anthony Davis. Also helps they just did not miss a shot until I think the third quarter. Like, that part isn't realistic, but his work defensively remains insane. And with how weird this season has been for the Raptors, like, I hope that he doesn't end up getting the short end of the stick for like all defense, because he has very much been an elite defender all year long when he's been four. Last shout out I had was Jalen Suggs. Again, since the All-Star break, 11 points. He's shooting a shade under 36% from three, which isn't great, but well above the level that we've seen from him. 1.4 steals, shade under a block. averaging 13, 4, and 3, and 2.2 steals over his last five games, shooting 44% from three. Watch the Miami game. Watch him defensively in that Miami game. The amount of matchups he took on, the reads that he was making off the ball, the on-ball feistiness. Jalen Suggs is already a really good defender. He has to figure out the other side of the ball, but like he has connector vibes. You need the shot to come for him. Don't give up on Jalen Suggs. There's no reason to give up on Jalen Suggs. I know it's easy to do so in relation to this is what Franz has done. This is what Evan Mobley's doing. Scottie Barnes, rookie of the year. This is what Shingun's doing. On and on and on. Very, very quality players in that draft class. I get it. And you see Jalen Suggs in like the top five, top six. It's like, look at his field goal percentage on Basketball Reference. Yeah. That man's a hooper. That man can defend his tail off. He has good feel on the offensive side of the floor. Just keep an eye on Jalen Suggs. Playing well right now. Those are the players that I had.
Any most improved players you want to drop or add, or you want to get that out of the way now? Or
right,
we can talk about it. Don't worry, we got two pots this week. Don't worry about it. Oh man! All right, Tim Hardaway Jr.
Can't miss.
He's made three or more threes in 11 of his last 13 games, shooting 59.5% from three in his last three games, I believe. Four games. He's shooting 57.6% from three since the All-Star break. That shot making is going to be important for Dallas, especially with the rotation of teams. Teams are going to double, apparently, both of those guys. They're going to even make those shots, so salute to him. Tyus Jones.
Wow, we're here.
11-10 against Dallas, 22-11 against Golden State, 25-12 against the Clippers. He continues to do the thing, and boy, Memphis needs his steadiness right now. It's not been a perfect world, but they are moving forward, and he's been a big piece of that. Terrence Ross.
He's alive.
10 made threes in his last two games. I want to say he's 10 for 20 since KD has gone out from three. Good chance for him to get comfortable with what Phoenix is going to need from him, what they're going to want from him. Good chance to explore the movement sets, be aggressive, knock some shots down. And at the very least, we have an answer. What does Terrence Ross look like in a different ecosystem? Pretty good. Joe Ingles, honestly, just love what he's brought to the table for the Bucks. Please peep the pick and roll game with Brooke Lopez. Everyone's going to talk about him and Giannis, but him and Brooke have a chemistry. Keep an eye on it. And then Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
27 points, 6.7 rebounds, 4.9 assists, shooting 60% from the field, averaging 10 free throw attempts in the month of March. The answer to is Jimmy going to shoot is yes. I don't know. The next question is, does it matter? Not sure about that one. But last four games, 38, 33, 28, and 26. Jimmy Butler's team tends to remind folks what he can do around this time of year. So just keep an eye on it, folks.
There we go. Can I ask I guess this will be like a technical free throw, I guess.
A technical free throw. Okay.
We'll try it out since you mentioned Joe Ingles. The Joe Ingles Brooke Lopez two-man game or the Joe Ingles Derek Favors two-man game in Utah?
Give me Joe and Brooke.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, to the regular free throws. Do you have some, sir?
I sure do. Do you?
Boy, do I.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that means I need to go first since you have some. Jeez, I wasn't prepared for that. All right. Is Udonis Haslem a real vet?
Yeah, you can say, yeah, that's the way that you can describe him. Yes.
Okay. When Dylan Brooks took them out, who had the 50 cent reaction? Carmelo Anthony or Dwight Howard?
Definitely mellow.
Speaking of 50 Cent, why does that picture of him and Rick Carlisle exist?
I have no idea. Actually, brief aside before you go to your next question, you know what I've been watching in my spare time that I just finished yesterday?
What?
I watched a playthrough of 50 Cent Bulletproof. I was like,
How was it?
It was solid. I mean, it's, you know, PS2 graphics and whatnot. So I was like, that's actually neat. I remember being younger and like, hey, I want to try that game. Just never bought it. You know, you grow up in a Christian household. Only so many things you can can do. But I was like, that's interesting. But yeah, so shout out 50. Well, not shout out 50 for multiple reasons, but shout out to the 50 Cent game at least.
That man caught himself.
I was like, hold on. Nope. I do not endorse.
That man was going to put an apology, a disclaimer on this pod if he forgot. Anyways, Would you rather be the non-shooter that's left open all the time or the shooter that gets attacked relentlessly on the other end?
Wow. Sheesh. That's kind of tough. The non-shooter, at least I got open shots.
Ah, yeah, but you about to get clowned repeatedly.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you'll get clowned repeatedly either way. So, I mean, at least give me the chance to score. I ain't getting in foul trouble taking open corner threes.
Easier conference finals path, Denver and Milwaukee.
All right, let's pull the schedule back up, or the standings back up, rather. Easier path, you say? Well, Milwaukee is one. So, okay. Milwaukee or Denver?
Yep.
I think it's going to be Milwaukee by default.
Okay. Grant Hill has removed the long-term Team USA commitment. Good or bad idea?
I don't... Why, I guess, is my question.
But we need y'all to show up.
Ah, I see. Well, all right.
Bigger red flag for Boston, the Celtics having lost three of their last five, or Damon Stoudemire saying, I'm going to Georgia Tech. Tomorrow.
I see. I'm just going to say the former, especially since they recently took the like the interim tag off of Joe Mazzulla. So that could just be like, all right, path ain't here. Losses are losses. They're no longer the one seed. Yeah, I'll go with that one. Good question.
Nah, no worries. Salute to Damon Stoudemire. Congratulations. NBA TV adding Oklahoma City at the Clippers to their schedule on March 23rd. They're dropping the Nets Heat game on March 25th, which was part of Udonis Haslam celebration weekend. Who did you call and how many calls did you make?
I called no one, man. I had no idea. I will say, like, I saw that. I didn't know about the UD thing. Like, I didn't know the date of the UD stuff. I know that they're doing something for him. I just didn't know what the date was. But, like, I first saw the announcement that the Heat Nets game was going to drop. I was like, man, we don't get Mikal versus Jimmy. That stinks. But I didn't know. I also didn't know that it was being replaced by OKC and the Clippers. So I guess we get the Shea revenge game, the Paul George revenge game, the Russell Westbrook revenge game. I will go through the rest of the roster to see if I'm missing anyone. But lots of revenge, so.
All right, you get one change, one time to be in power over one of these things.
Okay.
In-game rules, the All-Star game, or games played for awards. Which do you choose?
It'd be the All-Star game for me.
Oh, wow. Upset. Funnier Atlanta Hawk quote, John Collins himself calling this season a soap opera, or Trey Young saying Quinn Snyder is a hell of a coach, hell of a person.
Oh man, I think it's Trey by default. Cause like well, for John, like one, he's right. Two, not that Quinn isn't a great person, now, you know, but of the it's, what percentage of people do you think immediately bookmarked that? Like, yeah, we'll see in a couple years. Like it's gotta be north of like 40%.
40? Okay. Bet. Better fight night, Michael Porter Jr. and Zach Collins or Trae Young and Marcus Smart?
God. I don't know what to do with either one of those. Like, I saw both and I was like, why did this happen? And that's all the timeline. I was like, why is this happening? I will go Trae and Marcus Smart, I guess.
Okay. All right. Money, better money spent, $25K. To Marcus Smart for getting into it with Trae Young, or $30K to Fred VanVleet for losing his mind on Ben Taylor.
Probably Smart and Trey, because the next time Fred VanVleet draws a shooting foul will be the first time in a long time. I feel like that might have backfired.
Good luck throwing your finger, pal. Who do we see first? Ben Simmons or Cat?
Oh, geez. Probably Cat. Yeah. Oh man, I don't like that.
We can be honest. The Nets didn't think they was getting all this from Mikal Bridges, right? Oh. Like in a private moment, like ah.
Hey, man. Hey, if they are watching those Suns games, they had to know. Come on.
Okay. David DeRosa or Nick Joseph?
Hey, man, at least I'm getting playmaking from Nick Joseph.
Okay. All right, that's fine. What's the basketball equivalent of going from Derek Carr to Jimmy G?
Oh, God. Crap, man. I have an Atlanta example, but I can't do that. How do I answer this one respectfully?
If you can't, you do have the pass option.
Okay. God. Yeah, let me go ahead and let's say that one for the watch party.
Okay. I got you. Don't worry about it. Last one for me. Bigger MVP question mark, the discourse or the mustache?
Yes. Yes. A resounding yes.
All right, what you got?
Absolutely. Okay. All right, first question. Did we need the party picks?
Nah, man, they have to do all that. They have to do all that. I'll just get next one because I got a rant. So just keep going.
All right. Rank Milwaukee's best three defenders in order.
Brooke 1, Drew 2, Giannis 3.
Okay. Who's the best NBA team in New York?
Wow, that's an attempt from you. Who's the best basketball team in New York? You said NBA, right?
Yes.
Look at you covering your bases.
Yeah,
you
knew. I know your personnel, man. Know your personnel.
You knew I was going Liberty right.
Yeah, I heard Liberty season in my head as I was typing it in the notes app. Nope.
Well, one team has paid me. The other one has it. Go next.
All right. Which one is more likely to win a playoff series? Brooklyn versus Cleveland or New York versus Philly?
Ooh. Well, give me Brooklyn versus Cleveland.
Okay. Higher trust level. You with the Wolves, Jason Kidd with Christian Wood, or the Celtics with Grant Williams?
Celtics with Grant Williams is last. Buddy. Then it's me with the Wolves. They got Mike now. So what was the other option?
Christian Wood? Jason Kidd and Christian Wood.
Oh, no. There's no trust there. It's me. I win.
Folks, we did it. All right. Let's circle back to the Warriors for a moment. More likely to be on the roster next year, Draymond Green or Jordan Poole?
Yes.
Ah, I see. I see. Not how more likely works, but we will rock it. Are you aware that at this very moment,
the one that has a pod.
Okay, there we go. Are you aware that at this very moment, we could potentially get a Thunder Wolves play-in game for the eighth seed?
I was not. Let me double check that.
Yeah, we got OKC and 10. We got, yeah, so.
Oh, winner go home. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Who would you root for?
Who would I root? Minnesota.
Okay. That tracks. Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard this season?
Tough, but Kawhi.
Okay. Wendell Carter Jr. or Jakob Poeltl?
I see what you're trying to do here. I very much want to say, why am I in this? What did I do to deserve this? Jakob's defense, Wendell. It's Wendell Carter Jr., I feel like.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You sound very confident. All right.
I don't.
All right. All right. Fill in the blank. Kyle Anderson has been Minnesota's blank best player this year.
Shoot, man. He's been like their fourth best player. It's part of the problem. No offense to slow-mo.
I see. Talen Horton Tucker had a 37-8-10 game against the Hornets a couple of nights ago. Does he have a mole in the watch party?
Yes. We need to find who it is. It's been a whole lot of THT when we turn on Utah. I'll tell you that much.
You say this why. I respect it. Who's happier right now, Davante Adams or Zach Wilson?
Davante Adams.
Ah, I see. Bigger snub, Angela Bassett or the seventh best guard for all NBA?
Angela Bassett.
Okay. Is it fair to say I won the point guard debate with Brett Wynn by default? That is all I needed. That is for you, Dunker Spot Watch Party regulars. That is for you. I held on to the stock.
Oh, no.
And only one's playing. That's
Dave. Okay. I guess. Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, man. A question posed during one of our weekend watch parties. Is Dylan Brooks low-key saving NBA discourse?
Define saving. Like just bringing it, pulling it back to where it was?
Yeah. We could be talking about MVP or waves arms wildly, but instead we're talking about Dylan Brooks quotes and how he's better than Draymond and et cetera, et cetera.
I think he gave us a good break. I think Dylan Brooks plus March Madness is the break that everyone needed.
Okay. Last question that I have. Are you watching the Sterling movie?
Oh, yeah, I'm locked in. Everyone wants to talk about who's going to play all these people and who they have assigned. Who's going to play the Grizzlies? Oh. Who are you casting for Z-Bo?
I think we know who's getting cast for Z-Bo. Let's be honest.
Oh, all right.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join the Dunker Spot online watch parties, if for no other reason than to catch the references during the free throws. But we are having a lot of fun, lots of analysis, lots of antics. So come join us. The link will be in the podcast description. It should be hyperlinked. If so, just click in your info. It's free, no shenanigans. If not, hold down, copy and paste the link to your browser. Sign up. It's free, no shenanigans. Very easy to do. Come rock with us. Come watch some basketball with us or NASCAR or golf or The Bachelor or SmackDown or Raw. Or 2K streams, or FIFA, or we've watched a lot in the room. So just come rock with us. And with that, we will catch y'all a little later in the week.
So Chris Paul hyped about his casting or nah?